Our reading comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23, verses 33 to 43. When they came to the place that is called the Skull, they crucified Jesus there with the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Then Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they cast lots to divide his clothing. And the people stood by, watching, but the leader scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Messiah of God, his chosen one." The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." There was also an inscription over him, "This is the king of the Jews." One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him, saying, "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation. And we indeed have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus replied, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." This is the good news for today. Let us rejoice and be glad in it.
Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. The power of magic is a sight to behold. Magicians, illusionists, they can do amazing things, or at least seemingly so, making things appear or disappear, violating the very laws of nature. They conjure blatant deceptions right under our noses or in front of our faces. At the heart of it all, what magicians refer to simply as the method is simply misdirection. It relies on the fact that our brains have limited abilities to focus and pay attention. So if they could keep you focused on one thing, it makes you oblivious to all the other things that would normally seem so obvious. In 1999, psychologists Daniel Simons and Christopher Chabris at the University of Illinois did a remarkable study. They made a video in which there were two groups of three students standing in the elevator lobby of a dormitory. One of the sets of three were dressed in white t-shirts, the other dressed in black t-shirts. Each set had a basketball, and they moved around that lobby, passing the ball to each other, weaving in and out. And the simple question that came up on this video that people were supposed to watch is, please count the number of passes the team dressed in white t-shirt makes. So for the next minute and a half, this hilarious thing unfolds as they weave in and out of each other, making passes, and then you're focusing on where are they going. All of a sudden, in the middle of a video, from one side of the lobby, comes a person dressed in a gorilla suit, walks right into the middle of it all, turns to the camera, beats his chest, and keeps on walking. Truth is, nearly everybody got it right how many passes they were making. But a full 50% of the students studied never even saw the gorilla. They were so focused on the task at hand that this gorilla walking right through the middle of the scene, even pausing to look at the camera and beat its chest, they never even saw it. Where we put our attention determines what we notice. Where we look for power is where we will see it. Right now, there are great power struggles taking place in many capitals of the world, including our own. And there are many people vying for power who are attempting to divert our attention, so keep focused. But I want to talk about this passage today, for this same concept is on full display on Reign of Christ Sunday, or Christ the King Sunday, this day that's set aside that we might remember what true power looks like and how Christ manifests his power. We are finishing up with Luke's gospel this year. Luke's gospel is the gospel of amazement. 58 times in Luke's gospel, the word or form of the word amazement breaks forth. And most often out of the lips of those who are outcast or set aside, those who are beaten or worn down, who saw Christ come in and saw Jesus do his work and suddenly saw new beginnings, and they were amazed. Luke, in his gospel, is the only of the four gospel writers to include many of our most beloved stories. He's the only one to write about the prodigal son, focusing our attention on the God who yearns to reconcile with us even before we can figure out how to stammer an apology. He's also the only one who gives us that beautiful vignette of Mary and Martha, focusing our gaze squarely on the better things, the more important things, the things that draw us closer to the feet of Jesus rather than to the busy distractions of the world. And of course, as we get ready to approach the season upon us, he is the only writer to include details in the story of the birth of Jesus. We're the first ones to hear and bear witness to Jesus, the first one to be given sight of this miracle of love wrapped in flesh. It wasn't kings or wise ones from afar, but rather lowly shepherds going about life's daily toil. Here in this passage for today, the passage that sums up the whole year and points us to the core of who Jesus is and why he matters, you will notice that Luke is very careful about where our gaze and our attention lingers. Or maybe more to the point, he is very careful where it doesn't. We arrive at this horrible place of death and humiliation. This place where earthly powers are so fully on display. And yet Luke gives no heed to painting a picture of hammers or nails. Nothing lingering about stretched out bodies or blood-splattered wood. No attention is given to the horrors of that moment inflicted by earthly powers. He simply says there he was crucified. For to focus on those earthly powers risks missing the meaning that is about to blossom in Jesus' greatest glory up there, raised high on the cross. There is no gorilla that's going to stroll into the middle of this picture, but rather the full measure of what love incarnate looks like. So obvious in this story, and yet so easily missed if we're distracted by things like casting lots for clothes, or the mockery, or the derision, or the soldiers, or anything else that the world employs. No, Luke wants us looking directly at Jesus and listening to him. This paramount for today on Christ the King Sunday pictures a mountain. Do you remember what happened with Jesus on top of that mountain? What did? What was it? The Transfiguration. It was a moment where Jesus was joined by the prophets and the law, by Moses and Elijah, and it was easy for the disciples to get distracted and lose sight. Do you remember what God boomed out of the clouds to the disciples? This is my beloved son, and then what? Listen to him. Listen to him. And so on this day, on this Christ the King Sunday, as we look at Christ on the cross, we are going to do what God instructs disciples of all ages to do, which is to listen to him, even and especially there. And I think that the words that Jesus utters are needed even more in this moment on the cross. Listen to Jesus. For in the midst of being crucified, in the midst of the mightiest powers of earth doing their best, I mean their worst, of power on display only for power's sake, all of it, though, an illusion, really, Christ offers a glimpse of what is transformational power, what is true power, what is the kind of power that can break into dead ends and create new life. There, up on the cross, Emmanuel, God with us. The words that Jesus speaks in this gospel are words of forgiveness. Forgive them. Forgive them, Jesus says. Who is the them that Jesus is talking about? I think everyone. I think he's forgiving the person who put him on that cross. I think he's forgiving the religious leaders who created the circumstance. I think he's forgiving the soldiers who escorted him. I think he's forgiving those who are mocking him with their very breath. I think he is forgiving even the crowd who has shown up to this gruesome spectacle. And maybe it's because they've seen it over and over and over again, have become worn down to just how wrong it is. But the crowd who does nothing to stop what is unfolding. Jesus simply says, forgive them. Forgive them all. This text is not prim and proper. It's not the normal kind of text that we bring out when we wear this color white and when we dress up the church in these great pyramids. But then again, we know all too true that this world is not exactly prim and proper either, no matter how much we might imagine it so. This text is not a Camelot on display for us to see. But then again, the world is not neat or tidy either. The kingdom, Jesus says, has drawn near. So near we can feel it, we can touch it, we can taste it. But sometimes it feels so far away. Amen? But what Luke wants us looking at here is the gift of Jesus, one that cuts through with new, true power to offer new beginnings, the act of forgiveness. I wonder what would happen in this day and time, whether on the local, national, or international level, we practice forgiveness, how we would cut through it all and find new beginnings. And just in case you're thinking that this model of Jesus is just for display and looking at, think about people of faith through history who have lived out this way of Jesus, remember, this way of Jesus in forgiveness. I want to remind you of Oscar Romero, the one who had stood up to the powers of government and military, to the powers of injustice in the world, and was celebrating communion in church at the very table, offering forgiveness when he was gunned down by somebody who found that kind of power, the power of forgiveness at this table, too strong to tolerate. Or maybe fast forward to South Africa at the end of apartheid, when it would have been so easy for retaliation, so easy for recriminative kind of justice to flow forth. Desmond Tutu instead helped author a way of forgiveness, bathed in truth-telling and forgiveness, where horrific pains were let go that new beginnings might happen. And just in case you think that these things only happen by priests and holy people on international stages, it isn't but so long ago that there in a Dallas courtroom, as the judge was pronouncing a sentence of one kind, the brother of that person who had been killed in their own apartment mistaken or killed in their own apartment by an off-duty police officer. That the brother got up and offered to hug the police officer in an act of forgiveness. What we see in the power of Jesus on this cross is purely the power of forgiveness, the power that takes all other claimed power and cuts inside that we might have a new beginning. Jesus says one other thing up on that cross, if you were listening. There is one up on a cross next to him, whether rightly or wrongly, convicted and placed on that torture instrument. He asks Jesus for forgiveness. He yearns for that reconciliation. And what does Jesus say to him? Do you remember? Today you will be with me in paradise. This is not the first time that that word has been used in the Bible. Do you know the other time in the Bible that word paradise is used? Think back, way back, back further. The Garden of Eden. The only other time in the Bible that word is used is to describe the Garden of Eden, the time when all was good, when people were created for goodness and relationship. Jesus says, today you will be with me there. But here's the thing about that paradise. Just like forgiveness, it's not only for an end-of-life sort of grand conclusion, but rather that paradise is offered to us here and now, when we live in the way of Jesus, freely pouring out our forgiveness and our life power for the sake of others. When we do that, we live in paradise, not just when we cease breathing, but while we yet breathe. This passage is so important on this Sunday because it reminds us of the power of Jesus, minus all of the trappings and all of the distractions that sometimes come with the story. Next week, when you come back into this room, it will be gorgeous. It will be just as you've always seen it. There will be Advent decorations up and around the room, and the deacons have taken good notes. They know exactly what goes where and how much of it. As we prepare to enter Advent, as we prepare to look at how Christ offers the world a new choice, let's not get caught up in the trappings either. No matter how beautiful, no matter how wonderful, because in Stockbridge they can be both beautiful and wonderful. But instead, listen to Jesus. Instead, look for that baby coming into the stable, that fragile baby, because we know where that baby will end. And yet we know the new beginning that will be found there too. Amen.